This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Investors lost billions in the financial accounting fraud of Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and other corporate scandals. Finally, they'll receive some compensation for their losses. The world's largest financial services company, Citigroup, has agreed to pay $1.6 billion after taxes to settle a class action lawsuit brought by WorldCom investors. However, as part of the agreement, Citigroup denies ever having violated the law.
In hopes of keeping her out of prison, lawyers from Martha Stewart plans to argue that if she does time, it will cost people their jobs. A report in the Wall Street Journal says this tactic apparently has precedent and was successfully applied in a 1995 corporate crime case. Just how many of the 500 Martha Stewart living OmniMedia employees might get the axe if the company's founder goes to prison hasn't been disclosed. She faces up to 16 months on conspiracy and obstruction of justice convictions related to insider trading of stock in a biotechnology company. Stewart's sentencing is scheduled for June 17th.
New legislation introduced by Senator Edward Kennedy in the House Democratic Caucus, entitled the Safe, Orderly, Legal Visas and Enforcement Act of 2004, would allow long-term undocumented workers to become legal permanent residents and establish a process to reunite immigrant families. It would include a provision allowing immigrant workers who are illegally fired for trying to form a union to win back all their lost wages. If passed, the bill would overturn a Supreme Court decision which found providing back pay to an undocumented worker conflicts with U.S. immigration law.
Tractors and big rigs may become roadblocks on wheels in the UK this summer if farmers and truck drivers vent their frustration about rising fuel prices. With the global price of crude hovering around $40 a barrel, the British-based Farmers for Action says it's mobilizing members around the country for protests. The group conducted rolling blockades of fuel depots in 2000 on similar grievances and brought the UK very close to running out of gas as a result.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a study out of Maryland and McGill Universities, mothers who have a job outside of the home have 13% less free time than mothers who work exclusively at home. In addition, they also spend less time with their children, sleeping, doing housework, and report always feeling rushed 25% more. However, they do feel slightly more satisfied.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s when they promised that high tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust and the best high tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, beaming from radio stations from California to North Carolina, and streaming around the planet at radiopower.org on the internet. It is day 966 in the search for Osama bin Laden, 936 days since we've been looking for the anthrax killer who single-handedly guaranteed the passage of the Patriot Act, 351 days since the beginning of the search for weapons of mass destruction, and by my count, 298 days since the wife of Ambassador Joe Wilson was outed. And, of course, George Bush had this pithy comment to make about the treasonous senior administration official.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
He has no idea about a lot of things. Anyhow, those of you who are regular listeners have heard that clip many times, along with a clip of Joe Wilson talking about frog-marching Karl Rove out of the White House, one of my favorites, and I'm very honored and pleased to have on the program today a man who lives up to Thomas Paine's definition of patriotism. Thomas Paine said it is the duty of the patriot to protect his country from the government. And Ambassador Joseph Wilson is with us. Ambassador Wilson, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you. I never thought of myself as a Tom Paine figure. I always thought that this was just your civic duty to call your government to account for what it says and what it does.
Well, I think that's what Tom Paine thought, too. I mean, so
this is what we do as Americans.
There you go.
This is how we constructed our country.
There you go.
This is what the institutions of checks and balances, the Congress, the Supreme Court, and the Bill of Rights that gives freedom of the press and freedom of speech to the citizen. These are the responsibilities we have.
Absolutely. You have a new book out, The Politics of Truth, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Betrayed My Wife's CIA Identity. I confess I have not read the entire thing, but I've read well over 100 pages of it in bits and pieces here, and I find it fascinating. I recommend it to our listeners. I think it's a remarkable book. A couple of questions that I extracted out of this, if you don't mind. First of all, you tell the story of a friend of yours who was walking down the street and ran into Bob Novak, and Novak just started babbling at this guy. And immediately after, he came to tell you what was going on. Tell us that story real quickly, if that's all right.
Well, this friend of mine was walking down one of the main streets of Washington, D.C., and ran across Bob Novak, who I think was on his way to the CNN studio to do his crossfire thing. And this fellow struck up a conversation with Novak, and during the course of the conversation, asked Novak what he thought about this guy Wilson. Well, Novak used an expletive, which, by the way, is the same expletive that that I heard Scooter Libby was using about me, and said, you know, Wilson's a blank, and his wife is a CIA operative who works in the weapons of mass destruction programs at the CIA.
Now,
that was extraordinarily reckless.
This is
he did that before he even had the confirmations that he felt he needed to go to press with his story. Before he had contacted the CIA and asked them what he should do. Here he is just blabbering to absolute strangers to him on the streets of Washington. And my question on that is, if he was talking to one stranger who happened to know me, how many other strangers who don't know me did he talk to? And how many of them might be kind of disaffected people who think that the CIA is out to get him, might bear a grudge against the agency or against...
Well, the last real conspicuous outing of a CIA agent that I recall was, what, 8, 10, 12 years ago, the agent in Greece who was immediately assassinated?
Well, that's right. And as a consequence, I think that was almost 20 years ago, maybe longer now.
Yeah.
As a consequence of the outing of that particular agent, as well as one in Beirut who was also assassinated, there was passed the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, which made it a felony to do that. And which prompted the then, I guess, then Vice President Bush to say of people who leaked the names of operatives to the public, he called them the most insidious of traitors. If it's good enough for George Herbert Walker Bush, I assure you it's good enough for me.
Yeah. And in your book, you name the folks that you think are high up on the list. If you don't, give us a clue here.
Sure, you bet. What I did in the book is, because a lot of people outside the Beltway have real lives and don't obsess over this sort of stuff, I thought it'd be useful to bring people up to date on what the thinking is and what the stories are that are going around here. Some of which have been in the press, some of which the newspaper men have just been reluctant to put on to paper yet because of how ruthless this administration is. But fundamentally, as best I can figure it out, there was a meeting in March chaired by Scooter Libby, if not by the vice president himself. And during the course of that meeting, a decision was made to do what they called a workup on me. Now, a workup is White House speak, I guess, for running an intelligence operation to try and determine, find out everything they could about me, which then unearthed, among other things, the name of my wife and what she does for a living.
Yeah.
That way they were poised, when my opinion piece appeared in July, to use that information against me.
Now, do you think that this was payback, or is it just pure vindictiveness, or was this a warning to other people? Don't think about doing what Ambassador Wilson did.
Well, my judgment on this, I always operate on the assumption that governments act in a logical and rational manner. And the only logic for doing this, since I had already said everything I'd had to say, the only logic was to try and discourage others from coming forward. And so I assumed that that was the reason for doing it. At that time, there were a number of analysts who were speaking anonymously to the press about the pressure that they'd felt to conform their judgments to the political decisions that had already been made.
Mm-hmm.
That said, afterwards, in September, there was an article in the Washington Post quoting a senior administration official as saying it was just pure revenge.
If that's on the one hand, that's horrific, and on the other hand, watching this administration and what they've done with everybody from Shinseki on down, it's not surprising. 4 days after Iraq invaded Kuwait, you were in Baghdad. You met with Saddam Hussein, and I was startled to see April Gillespie's name in here, that you had worked with or for her. Tell us about that. What provoked the you know, is it true that Saddam basically said to the United States, hey, can I invade Kuwait? And we basically said yes. And what was your role in that in those 4 days there?
Right. April Gillespie, who was the ambassador, I was her deputy. And then after she left the country, I was in charge of the embassy. She had met with Saddam on the 25th of July, 25th or 26th of July. And during the course of that meeting, that's the sort of famous meeting, did she give him the yellow light and green light? She had basically repeated to Saddam what U.S. policy had been towards Arab border disputes from time immemorial. And that position had not changed, really, for 50 years, that the United States doesn't take a position on the merits, on the legal merits of either party's case, but the United States does encourage both parties to seek international mediation or resolve the problem diplomatically. Now, I spoke with somebody who was at that meeting, Nizar Hamdoun, in New York in April of last year, about 3 months before he passed away, we had lunch together in New York, and I asked him about this. I asked him whether or not Saddam had taken away from that meeting a sense that he'd been given a green light. He said, absolutely not. And so I felt that it was important to clear up the record on that, since so much has been written about it, and she has obviously been made the scapegoat in the who lost Kuwait debate. Yeah. The fact of the matter is, Saddam invaded Kuwait. If there was anybody who lost Kuwait, it was the Kuwaitis who negotiated rather badly at the last negotiating session. But even that, irrespective of however they were going to negotiate, the thugs of Iraq had sort of made some fundamental decisions about going in there. Now, in my meeting with Saddam, and I'll be brief, I met with him 4 days after the invasion, and he offered what I call the deal. You let me keep Kuwait, and I will give you all the oil you want at a good price. That was the carrot, and the stick was, should you try and militarily drive me out of Kuwait, you will suffer the spilling of the blood of 10,000 of your soldiers in the Arabian Desert, and you don't have the stamina or the intestinal fortitude to suffer that sort of political and military setback.
And how did you respond?
I said three things. I said, get out of Kuwait now. You're in violation of the UN Charter, the Arab League Charter, your own draft constitution. Quit looting diplomatic properties and quit holding our embassy officials, besieging our embassy in Kuwait, and allow all foreigners to leave the region, because he had closed his borders, putting in violation of the Geneva Convention, putting civilians at great risk, including American citizens.
Right, and then you tell the story in the book about the essentially the airlift of people out of there, and
right. We ended up evacuating a couple thousand Americans. We were able to obtain the release of 150 American hostages who were in Saddam's hands, and we had another 65-70 Americans who were offered safe haven at our embassy quarters, and we took care of them throughout all of this, and then ultimately flew them home as well.
Now, a year earlier, there's a photo in your book of Senator Richard Shelby holding Saddam's hand a year earlier. I think the backstory here is almost as fascinating as the contemporary story. Tell us about that.
Well, in the period right after the first Gulf War, there was a lot of interest in seeing if, in the aftermath of that, but the Iran-Iraq War,
right.
In the aftermath of that 8-year sort of bloodletting between the Iranians and the Iraqis, that perhaps we might be able to engage Saddam in more positive ways in the Middle East peace process, among other things. And Arlen Specter, the senator from Pennsylvania, was very assertive in that, and really good. He actually came out quite a bit and looked into seeing if there was any positive role that that somebody like Saddam could play. He was testing the waters. And he brought Dick Shelby out, and of course this is just one of those classic pictures where you're caught holding hands with somebody you probably shouldn't be caught holding hands with.
Yeah.
Now, if I were running Dick Shelby's communications operation, I would point out that he was a Democrat when that picture was taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, particularly if you were in the White House right now, I would thank you. Remarkable. You were stationed in Stuttgart and involved in coordinating troops to Bosnia. And you write about it in the book. It's a great autobiography. I mean, it's just a marvelous story of your life. And I'm wondering, why do you think it is that in Bosnia and in Kosovo, we militarily intervened in hot conflicts? I mean, you know, there were battles, and yet we didn't lose any soldiers in combat, and now we've lost over 700 in Iraq. What's the difference?
Yeah, that's right. Well, part of it was the doctrine that was implemented in the battle plan. We understood when we did Bosnia, which is the one that I was part of the team that did that. I was a political advisor to the Commander-in-Chief U.S. Armed Forces when we did that. And we understood fully that if you were going to go into one of these things and you wanted to do so protecting your most precious asset, the American soldier, sailor, airman, and marine, that you had to go in big and heavy, had to put in a lot of troops and had to put in a lot of armor so that the belligerents on the other side would understand that they were never going to kill you, but you were going to kill them real dead if they tried. The Rumsfeld Doctrine, by contrast, was that we can move faster, further, lighter, and we are so lethal that we can take a lot of territory quickly, which is accurate. We know how to fight what they call joint warfare. We can bring a lot of lethality onto targets. The trouble is, what they ignored was the task of occupying these territories. And as a consequence, we find ourselves undermanned and under-armored. And we're not talking about body armor here in the U.S. administration.
Yeah, it's a much broader thing.
We're talking about tanks.
I have to ask you to hold that thought right there. We've got to take a break. We're talking with Ambassador Joseph Wilson, author of The Politics of Truth, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Betrayed My Wife's CIA Identity. It's Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. 20 minutes after. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. back 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We're talking with Ambassador Joseph Wilson, author of The Politics of Truth, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Betrayed My Wife's CIA Identity, and a political centrist who contributed to the 2000 campaigns of George W. Bush and Al Gore, and who was praised by Senior President Bush. In fact, you speak well of him in your book. There's a difference in your mind between these two presidents?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As well, there ought to be. They're two different presidents, they have two different visions of the world, and their constituencies are different. This president's constituency is a much narrower base of the Republican Party, people who were basically frozen out of the last Bush administration are now front and center.
Yeah.
But I do speak kindly of the first President Bush, and I admit my bias. After all, we went to war together in the first Gulf War. But I always found him to be an honorable man, and he was always very, very good to me.
Yeah, yeah. What do you see? And now we have his son running the show here, and these bizarre behaviors are coming out of Washington D.C. from the lies and distortions, lying us into a war. I mean, this whole thing started with your outing a George W. Bush lie in the State of the Union, the uranium from Niger story. What do you see coming out of the investigation into the outing of your wife's status and even beyond that? I mean, not just the outing of her, but the reasons why it was done. I mean,
I'd like to point out that the fact that we haven't been able to bring this to closure in 9 months is not a reflection on the special prosecutor or on the FBI efforts. I know these guys, and I know they're doing everything they can. It's really a function of a stonewalling at the White House. And either the president is not serious when he says he wants to get to the bottom of this, or else some of his senior staff are just willfully insubordinate. But I fully expect that that justice will be done. And I point out that irrespective of whether you can get a conviction in this, at the moment that the CIA said that they needed an investigation open, that was an indication that the national security of the country had been breached. And people should remember that the crime here was not against Valerie and myself. It was really against the country and the national security of our country and, by extension, the safety of our country.
Yeah. What can the average person do besides vote for John Kerry? I mean, how can people get involved in the you're stirring some outrage here. What do you hope comes out of it? How do you want people to respond?
Well, the lesson for me is I've been able to go around the country over the last several months and talk to people both about Iraq and about some of these other things that have happened to me is that this is still just a wonderful, wonderful country. And Americans are fundamentally fine people. And that our system of governance, the democracy that we have, is still the best system of governance known to humankind. We need to be better stewards of our democracy. We need to vote. We need to participate in the political debate. We need to remember that the public square is open to all. One of the reasons why I'm fighting so hard on this is because I believe it was fundamentally un-American to go after me and my wife, even though everybody acknowledged the truth of what I had to say.
Yeah. And with regard to your participation in the Kerry campaign now?
Yeah, it's a great honor to have an opportunity to endorse a candidate. I never thought it would happen to me. I'm going around speaking to voters. I've been around the country, was in the primary season. Went to Iowa, New Hampshire, and all these other places where the primaries were fought, and just talked to voters and tried to answer their questions about what I thought that John Kerry brought to the table as a potential president and leader of our country.
That must have been.
It's wonderful. I learned so much, probably far more than I ever am able to impart to people. I take away from these experiences just a wonderful, wonderful feeling about our country and about our people.
Yeah, and I personally have a sense that John Kerry has the potential to be another FDR, even though he seems to be running as a toward the center right now. You do that to get elected.
Oh, he'll be a great president. As I like to tell people, I realize, as everybody else does, that sometimes it takes him a long time to clear his throat, and he seems to be talking complex in a complicated fashion, but these are really complicated issues.
Yeah.
And you want somebody who understands him.
And he's a good guy.
W might be a fine man. He reminds me of a fraternity brother. I have a lot of fraternity brothers. I don't need a fraternity brother as president. I want somebody who really understands the complexity of the world.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Wilson, for being with us today.
It's a great pleasure.
Thank you. It's Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Investors lost billions in the financial accounting fraud of Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and other corporate scandals. Finally, they'll receive some compensation for their losses. The world's largest financial services company, Citigroup, has agreed to pay $1.6 billion after taxes to settle a class action lawsuit brought by WorldCom investors. However, as part of the agreement, Citigroup denies ever having violated the law.
In hopes of keeping her out of prison, lawyers from Martha Stewart plan to argue that if she does time, it will cost people their jobs. A report in the Wall Street Journal says this tactic apparently has precedent and was successfully applied in a 1995 corporate crime case. Just how many of the 500 Martha Stewart living Omni Media employees might get the axe if the company's founder goes to prison hasn't been disclosed. She faces up to 16 months on conspiracy and obstruction of justice convictions related to insider trading of stock in a biotechnology company. Stewart's sentencing is scheduled for June 17th.
New legislation introduced by Senator Edward Kennedy in the House Democratic Caucus, entitled the Safe, Orderly, Legal Visas and Enforcement Act of 2004, would allow long-term undocumented workers to become legal permanent residents and establish a process to reunite immigrant families. It would include a provision allowing immigrant workers who are illegally fired for trying to form a union to win back all their lost wages. If passed, the bill would overturn a Supreme Court decision which found providing back pay to an undocumented worker conflicts with U.S. immigration law.
Tractors and big rigs may become roadblocks on wheels in the U.K. this summer if farmers and truck drivers vent their frustration about rising fuel prices. With the global price of crude hovering around $40 a barrel, the British-based Farmers for Action says it's mobilizing members around the country for protests. The group conducted rolling blockades of fuel depots in 2000 on similar grievances and brought the U.K. very close to running out of gas as a result.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a study out of Maryland and McGill Universities, mothers who have a job outside of the home have 13% less free time than mothers who work exclusively at home. In addition, they also spend less time with their children, sleeping, doing housework, and report always feeling rushed 25% more. However, they do feel slightly more satisfied.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm back! 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 26 minutes before the hour. All right, did you see the questioning this morning of General Taguba and General Smith and Stephen Cambone, the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence? This was just mind-boggling. The Republicans are working so hard to politicize this thing, to turn any little thing, turn it into a political scandal, use it to attack John Kerry. Two different Republican senators took an opportunity to say,
This is overblown, you know, kind of the rush we're in. And then, and not only that, John Kerry's using it to raise money. And it is just, this is over the top. I mean, this is just over the top. And I don't remember which Democrat it was who said it, but he said, I'm not going to respond to the partisan sniping from the other side. He said, I think this matter is larger than that, and it deserves better than that. And it was just, anyway, I believe, was the, or Inhofe, yeah, was the senator. He went into this rant about, you know, this is just, you know, we got to remember these people are killers and murderers and terrorists. Well, no, I'm sorry, Senator. The Red Cross says 90% of them are absolutely innocent people who were just rounded up in sweeps because they didn't speak English. The soldiers didn't know what to do, and so they took them to the jail to sort it out. And some of them had been there for 6 months. Absolutely, just absolutely innocent people. Innocent of anything. You know, the local mechanic. The guy who works at the bakery. 90% of it, according to the Department of Defense investigation, it was between 60 and 80%, according to the Red Cross, 90%. Oh, no, these people are criminals. You got to understand that. This is a tempest in a teapot. This is no big deal. Yeah. And Cambone, the Undersecretary for Defense Intelligence, opened his remarks by saying to grant terrorists the rights and protections that they deny others. He goes through this whole rant about 9/11, right, which Iraq had nothing to do with. And everybody knows that, except the people who watch Fox News or listen to right-wing talk radio. But the world knows it, and anybody who actually reads newspapers or pays attention to the news knows it. In the United States, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11 and represented no terrorist threat to us. It was an invasion based on lies. And so you've got soldiers over there, and they actually believe that there's weapons of mass destruction because they believe the lies that were told by the Bush administration. And so they're, you know, we can't find this stuff anywhere. We got to get it out of these people. Pull their fingernails off. Well, sick a dog on them, to be more accurate. Anyhow, here's Cambone. He says, to grant terrorists the rights and protections they deny others makes a mockery of the Geneva Convention. You get that? See, this is the fundamental difference between the Reichwing viewpoint of the world and the viewpoint of rational citizens and the rest of the world and citizens of all of the democracies around the planet. Because what he's saying, and this is the same thing that you're hearing on the right-wing noise machine right across the board. What they're all saying essentially is, these guys don't respect us, therefore we don't have to respect them. Which is the same thing as saying, we now have a permission or maybe even an obligation to become just like them. And that's why the world is looking at us right now with shock and horror. Because the world is saying, we didn't think you were like them. We thought you were different. We thought America had ideals. We thought that Statue of Liberty meant something. We thought that the Bill of Rights actually meant that anybody who gets arrested has due process of law, can get a lawyer, has an opportunity to be faced by their accusers. We thought you believed in those things. And this administration is just coming right out and saying, nope. You know, the last time a democracy did this was in 1933, 1934, in Europe. Arguably, you know, a year or two earlier, Mr. Mussolini, but you just don't do that. You don't say, okay, we're going to sink to your level. We'll show you who's won. Tell me, who wins in that situation when we become the terrorists? Now, obviously,
No, I'm not saying we have become the terrorists, but what has happened is that we have behavior that the Arab world is looking at and going, whoa, that sure looks like what Saddam did. And then you get these rationalizations again from the Reich saying, well, you know, the Arabs have no right to criticize us. They don't allow human rights. Well, you're right. They don't allow human rights. But we are better than that. We have an ideal to stand up to. The reason why when the United States was founded in 1776 or 1787, however you want to date it, there were no other democracies in the world. And today, nearly two-thirds of the world is democratic in one variation or another. And there's only 47, 48 dictatorships left, and they're dropping like flies, or all under incredible pressure for democracy. I mean, look at what's happening in Iran. The reason why is because people have been looking at us for 150, 200 years and saying, you know, that looks like a pretty good system. And here we get this man, the Undersecretary of Defense, and I'm just amazed that none of the senators called him on this. To grant terrorists rights and protections they deny others makes a mockery of the Geneva Convention. Yeah, you know, the Nazis didn't respect the Geneva Convention, but when we took Germany, we did. And the world looked back and said, you know, the Nazis were bad guys and the Americans were good guys. I mean, isn't that how you want to be remembered? Isn't that what it's all about? Reuters. Here's a story from Dubai. Dateline Dubai. Reuters. Today. This was published just a couple hours ago. Arab commentators reacted with shock and disbelief on Monday over President Bush's robust backing of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld against calls for his resignation. They go on to say, editors and ordinary Arabs were united in their condemnation of Bush, who said the United States owes Rumsfeld a debt of gratitude. This is a quote from Omar Belouchet, editor of the Algerian national daily newspaper El Watan. This is the largest newspaper in Algeria. He's the editor. He says, after the torture and vile acts by the American army, President Bush goes out and congratulates Rumsfeld? It's just incredible. I am in total shock. He added, Bush's praise for Rumsfeld will discredit the United States and further damage its reputation, which is already at a historic low in the Arab world. Analysts have said the damage from images seen worldwide of U.S. soldiers abusing naked Iraqi prisoners in Abu Ghraib prison would be indelible, incalculable, and a gift to al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The image of the occupation now in the minds of so many people in the Arab world is that of the humiliation of an occupied people, contempt for Islam, sadism, and racism. Racism, you say? Well, here's what the a political analyst based in Dubai, Jawad Al-Ani, told Reuters. He said, after Mr. Bush's decision to keep Rumsfeld, all their apologies seemed like lip service. Mr. Rumsfeld would have certainly lost his job if the prisoners were Americans. University of Algiers professor Mahmoud Belgir agreed. He said, I cannot believe that the United States reacts the way an authoritarian regime would. Bush should have done the honorable thing and fired Rumsfeld. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Belhamir, but what you're discovering is the problem isn't Rumsfeld. The problem is Bush. Bush bringing in people like Ashcroft to bring us the Patriot Act. Bush coming in and saying, in his first week in office, we're going to take out Iraq. We're going to get that oil. We're going to avenge my daddy, and I'm going to be a war president, and I will ride to a second term in office on the strength of that as a war president. Yes, I want to be a war hero. 1-866-889-8894. What are your thoughts on this? Joe in Provo, Utah is on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here. I love your show. It's so encouraging, and you bring your insights out to where we can take a look at things.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you run into this, because I did last night. I'm driving a truck over the road, and I'm running for U.S. Senate. So I'm pushing on Bush and talking with people about it. This guy came in and said, look, the bottom line is that's our oil. And I'm going, excuse me? He said, that's our oil. We're the biggest and the baddest. It's ours, and we're going to get it. We're going to take it. If anybody wants to get in the way, that's too damn bad.
Yeah.
Now, the point of that, to me, that struck home, and it was very unnerving, was it isn't about the leadership. And I feel like, although we're using the leadership, when you talk, you use the leadership as a catapult to bring forward the message for people to change their attitudes and their minds, because that's where it's got to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it really is about the leadership, because the leadership in this country sets the tone for everything else. When John Adams was president and he passed the Alien and Sedition Acts, he was throwing in jail newspaper editors who were editorializing against him, and Americans were going, yep, okay, that's cool, yep. And then when Thomas Jefferson came in and he let these guys out of jail, and he said, that's not how we do it in America. America's better than that. People going, oh, yeah, okay, well, that makes sense, too. I mean, you just, it's all about leadership, and George Bush has set a tone for America.
That, don't you think that, it's also about, because I know in my campaign, when I talk to people, I go, look, the bottom line here is, you can put me up there if you want, you can put anybody up there, but the bottom line is, if we reach into the principles and the ideals of what this country is really about, we the people, imagine what we could do if we wake up and understand that it's our responsibility in our daily lives and in the way we think, rather than being led. Wouldn't it be great if we became leaders in our own lives?
Yeah, you know? Amen. Amen. Well said, Joe. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Yep. Well said. And that's what, you know, that's what we need to do, is wake people up. Michael in Atlanta, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment about the prisoners of war and so forth. I've been looking back over some old articles, and I'm finding some very interesting stuff about Guantanamo Bay and so forth, and it just seems to me that this is just them reaping what they sow, because everything they did with Guantanamo Bay and the prisoners of war from Afghanistan and so forth just seems like it's portraying a complete disregard for Geneva Conventions anyway, at the very least skirting them.
Well, they've come right out and said the Geneva Conventions do not apply at Guantanamo Bay.
Exactly.
And you say, why?
Play that game,
yeah.
If they're going to play that game, in the end, they're going to get hurt, you know, and they're just, we're seeing,
and they is us.
Karma, if you like.
Yeah, and they is us. I mean, this is it. You know, Seymour Hersh was, last night he was interviewed by Chris Matthews, and Chris said, why were these pictures taken if these soldiers were actually ordered to take these pictures or requested to take these pictures? And Hersh said, and he's the guy who broke the story and did the investigative report, he says, they're blackmail. And he goes, blackmail? He says, yeah, when they bring a new guy into the prison, they show him the pictures and say, this could happen to you if you don't act right.
And, yeah, exactly. There's this report from May 28th of last year. Pentagon reports new Guantanamo suicide attempts on Yahoo. And it's talking about they're claiming they're in humane conditions there, but they're committing suicide. And then there was this report.
And they've not let the Red Cross in there.
Yeah, and then there's a report from the Daily Times in the UK talking about it, plans to turn it into a death camp with its own death row and execution chamber.
And we just gave Halliburton, another few $100 million to expand the first American concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay. To expand
it's amazing that they're playing this game and where they're pretending like, oh, we're so humane, we don't know how this happened. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're totally encouraging it.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, thanks for the call. Good point. Well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The first Geneva Convention was signed, by the way, Stephen Cambone said the Geneva Convention. It's not convention, it's conventions, plural. The first one was signed in 1864. It was the result of a guy, what was his name, Henry Dunant. Or Dunant, D-U-N-A-N-T. He had traveled through Normandia, north of Italy, Italia, after the Battle of Solferino. And in 1859, and in 1862, he published a book called A Memory of Solferino, in which he made an appeal for the creation of a relief society to help out and for people to volunteer. And that led to the creation of the International Committee for the Relief of the Wounded, which later became the International Committee of the Red Cross. I didn't realize until I started looking into this that the International Committee of the Red Cross is actually the body that is responsible for enforcing
the Geneva Conventions, for monitoring their application. I mean, every country is supposed to enforce them internally because they've signed the treaty. But the Red Cross is the one who is supposed to, by law, show up and say, this is right or this is wrong. And they've been saying since the middle of last year, well, actually, for a year, for 14 months now, what's going on is wrong. And since the beginning in Guantanamo Bay, the Red Cross has been complaining about this. No one may be subjected to physical or mental torture, to cruel or degrading corporal punishment or other treatment. Capturing combatants and civilians who find themselves under the authority of the adverse party are entitled to respect for their life, their dignity, their personal rights, and their political, religious, and other convictions. They must be protected against all acts of violence or reprisal. They are entitled to exchange news with their families and receive aid. This, I'm reading to you from the Geneva Conventions, the most recent, 1949, that we ratified. 10 minutes before they are.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the 2 most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Making companies more responsible for the products they make can cut down on what goes into the garbage can. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Over the past 50 years, single-use products have become a driving force in industrial economies. The environmental costs of our throwaway society are enormous. Michael Renner is a researcher with the World Watch Institute. He says new policies in Europe aim to cut down on wasteful consumption. Companies must comply with extended producer responsibility laws.
What extended producer responsibility means is companies are no longer permitted to produce a product, sell it, and then basically never have to worry about that product and the materials that are embedded in the product again. These extended producer responsibility laws state that companies have to be responsible for their product the entire way. Once the product comes to the end of its useful life, the company is actually expected to take that product back and then to see whether the product can be taken apart so that maybe the materials can be salvaged, the various parts can be reused.
Renner says these take-back laws encourage companies to produce goods that can be recycled or reused. He says another practice called cradle-to-cradle encourages manufacturers to work together to cut waste.
But another idea that's embedded in Cradle to Cradle is to see whether the byproducts of a given factory, instead of becoming part of the waste flow, whether they might actually be something that is usable in another factory, hopefully one that is actually located physically very close by.
Renner says making industry more responsible for its products is an effective way to put an end to our throwaway consumption habits. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. 5 minutes before the hour. Rolling down the highway here. Music for our friends, our trucker friends, listening on the Sirius satellite radio system. You know what the Bush administration is lacking here? People say, you know, Seymour Hersh talking about, you know, they took these pictures as blackmail. Number one, to threaten people when they came into the prison, and perhaps more importantly, to say, okay, we've got these pictures of you. We will mail them to your family. We'll mail them to your friends. We'll hang them on the telephone pole outside your house if you don't behave. Blackmail. We have this, the Guantanamo, the concentration camp, the first American concentration. Well, it's not the first. I mean, we had the Japanese-American internment camps. So, but the first American concentration camp in the memory of most people, you know, this largely the last couple of generations here at Guantanamo Bay, and I think that, you know, you ask the question, why would an administration do this? Because if at some point down the road we were to go to war with, say, China or Russia, which I think are both actually very real possibilities, wouldn't we want, if they took our soldiers prisoner, wouldn't we want them to adhere to the Geneva Convention? Wouldn't we want the world to join us on our side because they say, you know, America is the country that respects the rule of law. We're going to be on their side. We're not going to go with the dictators. But I think that what's going on here is that George W., and the folks in his administration really and truly have no sense of time. They have no sense of history, but they have no sense of forward time. They think that we are king of the hill. You know, we won the Cold War. Jimmy Carter outspent the Russians, and so in the first few months of Reagan's administration, they collapsed. Well, maybe. Anyhow, this whole thing, we are on the top of the hill, and because we're on the top of the hill, we don't have to worry. We don't have to care about human rights. We don't have to care about providing a good example for the world. We don't need allies, because we're on top. And, you know, Britain thought that once. Napoleon thought that once. The Turks, the Ottoman Empire, thought that once. The Romans thought that once. The Greeks thought that once. The Aztecs thought that once. It's crazy. Anyhow, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the true people's radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
You know. grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that's exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Investors lost billions in the financial accounting fraud of Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and other corporate scandals. Finally, they'll receive some compensation for their losses. The world's largest financial services company, Citigroup, has agreed to pay $1.6 billion after taxes to settle a class action lawsuit brought by WorldCom investors. However, as part of the agreement, Citigroup denies ever having violated the law.
In hopes of keeping her out of prison, lawyers from Martha Stewart plan to argue that if she does time, it will cost people their jobs. A report in the Wall Street Journal says this tactic apparently has precedent and was successfully applied in a 1995 corporate crime case. Just how many of the 500 Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia employees might get the axe if the company's founder goes to prison hasn't been disclosed. She faces up to 16 months on conspiracy and obstruction of justice convictions related to insider trading of stock in a biotechnology company. Stewart's sentencing is scheduled for June 17th.
New legislation introduced by Senator Edward Kennedy in the House Democratic Caucus, entitled the Safe, Orderly, Legal Visas and Enforcement Act of 2004, would allow long-term undocumented workers to become legal permanent residents and establish a process to reunite immigrant families. It would include a provision allowing immigrant workers who are illegally fired for trying to form a union to win back all their lost wages. If passed, the bill would overturn a Supreme Court decision which found providing back pay to an undocumented worker conflicts with U.S. immigration law.
Tractors and big rigs may become roadblocks on wheels in the UK this summer if farmers and truck drivers vent their frustration about rising fuel prices. With the global price of crude hovering around $40 a barrel, the British-based Farmers for Action says it's mobilizing members around the country for protests. The group conducted rolling blockades of fuel depots in 2000 on similar grievances and brought the UK very close to running out of gas as a result.
Today's Dow Bob Report. According to a study out of Maryland and McGill Universities, mothers who have a job outside of the home have 13% less free time than mothers who work exclusively at home. In addition, they also spend less time with their children, sleeping, doing housework, and report always feeling rushed 25% more. However, they do feel slightly more satisfied.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Before we rush full tilt buggy into the 04 election cycle, let's hear a word from our sponsors. Yes, the good folks who pay for the campaigns of George W. and most of the Democratic presidential contenders should be acknowledged before next year's vote. I say we should highlight these corporate interests now, just to get a sense of who's buying what in our land of the free. Of course, the corporate big spenders and the politicos they purchase insist that nothing is being bought, that the corporations putting up $100,000 to $1 million each want only good government. If you believe that, Pollyanna, you should check out something called Internal Political Party Documents at this website, campaignlegalcenter.org. Here you'll find the smoking quid pro quo between the corporate contributors and the political contributees of both parties. For example, there's a letter from the Republican Party chairman to the drug giant Bristol-Myers Squibb requesting $250,000. Does the letter ask for good government? Not exactly. It encloses the GOP's health care proposal, asking Bristol-Myers for any changes they'd like to make. The Politico says to the CEO, quote, "We must keep the lines of communication open if we want to continue passing legislation that will benefit your industry." There's another letter from the Republican finance chairman to the chairman of Global Crossing, the corrupt telecommunications giant that, at the time, was pushing for a federal okay of a merger. As an ante, Global Crossing had pledged $100,000 to the party with a promise to hike it to $250,000 if the merger went through. Surprise! It did. So the finance chairman wrote back to the corporate guy, "I am taking the liberty of enclosing an invoice for the additional upgrade." This is Jim Hightower saying, this corporate money is not buying good government, it's buying corruption. To stop it, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. Broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. On radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. What about Ralph Nader? What about John Kerry? How should this thing play out? How do those of us who hold what we consider progressive values make decisions in this election? Jeff Cohen has written just an absolutely great piece about this issue, this conundrum. It was published in commondreams.org on May 7th, a progressive response to the Nader campaign. Jeff Cohen is the founder of the media watch group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and was communications director of Kucinich for President. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Nice to be with you.
Oh, I'm pleased to have you here. Tell me about your idea here that progressives need to get out and support John Kerry.
Swing states. I believe I'm very aligned with Ralph Nader. I've worked with him on battle after battle in recent years, shoulder to shoulder with Ralph Nader. I'm much closer to his views than John Kerry's on everything from the war to health care to trade. So that's got to be clear. And I think you chose the right word, Tom, conundrum. I have a humble suggestion. I believe that this election, that giving Bush four more years is unthinkable.
Yeah, we may not be here, Jeff. I mean, if he has another four more years, he may be coming for you and me.
Right, goodbye to free speech. I just think that what he is capable of in a second term will make the first term look like a garden party. So, and on the other hand, people want the ability to express their views, that we need a real change in the change in direction in our country, and not exactly what John Kerry is putting forward. He's not talking about a real change. So what I'm encouraging people to do that are deans, that were Dean supporters, that were Kucinich supporters, that were Nader 2000 supporters, is in those close states, those 17 or so competitive states, the so-called battleground states, I think it's the duty of progressives to mobilize behind the Kerry vote in those states and make sure that Bush doesn't get reelected. In states like Vermont, states like Texas, Rhode Island, you know, there's 33 states where the margin of difference between Kerry and Bush will be 10, 20, 25%. There, I think it's fine to cast the protest vote, cast an anti-war vote. But what I'm encouraging progressives to do is, as their main election task presidentially, is to mobilize in those close states to make sure Kerry is the next president. And then we can keep our progressive and independent networks, our activist networks, our move-on networks, our true majority networks, and make sure we're leaning on Kerry to do the right thing. But we've got to get Bush out.
You know, Jeff, I would suggest taking it two steps further. Number one, why don't we do what the conservatives did? The conservatives, really, it was a coalition of NRA-type gun nuts and anti-abortion folks, actually anti-birth control even people, the survivalists. And, I mean, there's just this whole and extreme right-wing Christian zealots, this whole coalition. And they basically got together and they said, you know, this country has a two-party system. We, you know, whether we like it or not, we have first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections. No country in the world has copied our constitutional system, because most of the other democracies of the world came along after John Stuart Mill came up with the idea of proportional representation in 1861. So you just can't have a third party until we get instant runoff voting, or we change the Constitution to have proportional representation, which is not going to happen in our lifetimes. And so why not... These conservatives said back in 1964, why not take over one of the two major parties? And they did. They succeeded. And they were just, you know, a little too upfront about it with Barry Goldwater in 64. And so, you know, with Ronald Reagan, they got a little shiftier, you know, and then George W. I mean, George W. Bush would not be president right now if he hadn't lied his way through the thing. Now, I'm not suggesting that people do that, because I think, frankly, our values are held by the majority of Americans.
That's
But why not? Why not set out right from the get-go and say, okay, down the road, our goal is to have instant runoff voting so that there can be third and fourth and fifth parties that can participate. But right now, we realize the reality that in the way that this thing is set up, a third party is always going to hurt the people it's closest to, and we don't want that happening on our side. You know, let Judge Moore run against the Republicans, but it's not going to happen on our side,
and we're going to take
back the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I agree with your view. I'm one of those who believes that it may take 5, 10, 15 years, but there's no reason that progressives and solid pro-union, pro-environment, pro-fair trade, pro-peace activists can't go in, city and state, take over the Democratic Party, transform it so it stands for values. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the way to go.
I think we have to, because the DLC is out there trying to do the exact opposite.
Right. They're trying to turn the Democratic Party and in many ways succeeded.
Oh, yeah.
Turn the Democratic Party into a moderate corporate party.
Yeah.
I should say a corporate party more moderate than the Republicans. There's nothing moderate about DLC policies of, unfair trade. But I'm with you 100%. It takes years. It's not glamorous work. It means you go in and you become a Democratic Party committee person in a city or county and then in a state. There's no reason that can't be done state by state. I've been for that for years. There are groups that try to do that kind of work, like Progressive Majority PAC and the Campaign for America's Future. So I'm with you. But
the argument
I made on the Common Dreams website was much narrower. It was, what are we going to do about this November? And even if you're not one of those, like Tom Hartman and Jeff Cohen, that believes we should transform the Democratic Party so it stands for something, progressives have got to decide what they're going to do for November.
But, Jeff, aren't we sending a mixed message? Aren't, you know, by saying, if you live in one of the battleground states, vote for Kerry. If you live in one of the safe states, vote for Nader. Shouldn't we be saying, no matter where you live, don't just vote for Kerry. Get out there and infiltrate the Democratic Party. Let's take this damn thing over. The Republicans did it, or the conservatives did it with the Republican Party. We can do it with the Democratic Party. It happened in 1932. It happened back in 1800. We can do it again.
I agree with you. And I think you might be right. Yeah, I'm just saying that to reach out to some of your audience members.
Well, these people get offended. You know, they get.
I agree with you, and I did make that point in my column on Common Dreams that in 1932, it's not understood widely that Franklin Roosevelt ran on a very wishy-washy, let's balance the budget, was a very nowhere program.
Oh, he was moderate. He was,
he was pushed by these social movements and labor unions and tenants unions and people that were fighting for the unemployed, and they went into the Democratic Party. Many of them came out of the socialists or the communists or other independent.
Many of them came out of the progressives and populist movements of the late 19th century and the early 20th century that brought us the direct election of the Senate, brought us women's suffrage, or they were the children of the people in that movement who looked back and said, you know, we tried to do that, the Bull Moose Party and all these things, and it didn't work. And so we need to get active inside one of the major parties. The other thing that is in my mind, and I just have to lay this out, Ralph Nader, if he is honest, I mean, if I am really beginning to frankly question his motives, because if he was genuinely honest about wanting George Bush out of the White House and wanted to make a statement and get enough votes in certain states to have matching funds for the party that he's affiliated with and all that kind of stuff, he could do it very simply by naming, because he's running for president. He's doing something unique. It's, if you're running for the Senate, if you're running for the House of Representatives, you can't do this because those are directly elected. But as in Bush v. Gore, we learned, you know, as Scalia wrote, you have no right to vote for the president of the United States. The only right you have is to vote for an elector. Right. And if Ralph Nader was to select the same electors as have already committed themselves to John Kerry, then your vote for Ralph Nader would register as a vote for Ralph Nader, but at the level of the Electoral College, you would be voting for John Kerry. Nader would get the matching funds, Nader would get the bragging rights, Nader would become a power broker in the party, and yet every single vote cast for Ralph Nader would on the, at the, at the level of the Electoral College, push John Kerry ahead.
Yeah, let me react to that. There are people, including lawyers, working on that idea. Ralph Nader has not rejected that idea. I'm not questioning his motives. I believe that there are a lot of legal obstacles. For example, Republican Secretary of States, if they want to create mischief, can make sure that Nader's electors are not put on the ballot. They could allow Nader to be on the ballot with the identical electors of Kerry and then not aggregate them after November. There are legal problems that are being worked out. That article that you're referring to that put forward this idea where Kerry and Nader use the same electors, I think it was a brilliant idea, but a lot of work is being done on it as we speak. You said IRV may be in the future. There's actually an article in The Nation magazine that describes how in states like New Mexico, where they have a Democratic governor, Governor Richardson, and they have Democrats and majority in the state legislature, there's no reason they can't have a special session in New Mexico to implement IRV voting in advance of this election. And that would allow you to vote your conscience if you believe Nader is far superior to Kerry and not end up with Bush.
Yeah.
So that's I think IRV voting in some states could be implemented as early as for this election. What really rankles me about Ralph Nader, and he remains a hero of mine, what really rankles me is he could have run a safe state strategy from the beginning.
I know.
He could say, and by the way, Tom, I'm with you on taking over and transforming the Democratic Party, but Nader isn't. He could have said, since we've got to drive Bush out of office, I'm only running in these 32 states where even if I have a big turnout, 8%, 10%, 12%, 15%, it won't change the outcome of the election in that state. I'm running in those states. If you're against the war and you want to tell Kerry you're against the war, vote for me in Vermont, vote for me in Texas, vote for me in Mississippi. And it would have been having our cake and eating it too.
Yeah, he would have been a hero. I mean, I voted for him in 2000. There's no way I'm going to vote for him this year.
Well,
and I'm in a safe state.
Right. I believe, well, there are a lot of people so angry with Ralph, they're not even voting for him in safe states. Yeah. But, I mean, that's what's sad about it. He had an option in front of him that would have obliterated from any of our minds the nightmare that Florida might happen again in terms of it being so close that it could be stolen. And he didn't take that option, and it just rankles me.
Yeah, it makes me crazy. And then I see people saying, well, you know, maybe he's just an old egomaniac, and I'm starting to think, maybe, I don't know. You know, we've actually two or three times invited him to be on this program, and apparently he was on another liberal talk show and just got reamed, and he's gun shy now.
Reamed. They didn't allow him to talk.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard a little of that.
Yeah.
That may be.
So I keep
reaching out to him. I'd love for you and him to dialogue. I'd love for you to get from him, well, why don't we that have the Nader agenda, the full progressive agenda, why don't we take over the Democratic Party state by state? I'd love to hear you ask him that question.
Yeah, I'd like to get into it with him, and I'll do it respectfully. I don't do rude here. I do. I have conservatives on from time to time. Actually, sometimes I do. Anyhow, we're talking with Jeff Cohen, the founder of FAIR, was communications director of Kucinich for president. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour, and let's see, we got a caller here. Dave and Eureka. Dave, hang on to the line. We'll pick you up on the other side of this break.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select this earth-friendly wine personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the Reitzers creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my 15. $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We're talking with Jeff Cohen, the founder of the media watch group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and former communications director for Kucinich for President. You were also, weren't you the producer of Bill Moy,
Donahue.
Yeah, Phil Donahue. Thank you.
Yeah. I was on the air every day in the afternoon on MSNBC as a commentator.
Oh, yeah.
As the war was building up, and then I started appearing less and less as the war was coming, the war in Iraq.
Yep.
And I was the senior producer on Phil Donahue's primetime show on MSNBC, which was canceled as the war was approaching.
Right. And with the highest ratings on the network, it was canceled.
MSNBC has lousy ratings, but Phil Donahue was the top-rated show. They canceled it, and then a memo leaked out that was never supposed to get public, which said, quote, Phil Donahue represents a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war.
Yeah.
And you know, went on to say, describe a nightmare scenario where Donahue would be, quote, a home for the liberal anti-war agenda at the same time that our competitors will be waving the flag at every opportunity, unquote. So it was a political firing, a political cancellation. There's a lot of censorship going on, and it's generally corporate censorship in our country.
Yeah, and it's truly tragic. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. Dave in Eureka, California, has been patiently waiting. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. You're on live with me, Tom Hartman, and Jeff Cohen.
Always a pleasure. And, gentlemen, I think you're debating something of a very ingenious nature here. I, too, share Ralph Nader as something of a hero, as dangerous as it must be, having him in the race right now. But the idea of common electors might be the solution to this. But how often do we find ourselves in a polling booth having to choose between the very corrupt Democratic congressman or the even more corrupt Republican, and that's what we've got. We need alternatives, and he's speaking to that, and it needs to be heard. I hope you can get him on your program. Incidentally, I just sent you an email. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's very applicable to the discussion here.
No, I can't check it while I'm on the air. You can drop into the chat room, and I can read that.
Well, I can't get on it. I'm a victim of high-tech government hackers. I don't know if Ralph's aware of all that, but
yeah.
The quote is, the only perverse marriage we need to concern ourselves with is the marriage between corporate special interests and our government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said, Dave. Well said. Thank you very much.
I mean, wouldn't it be great one day to be going to a voting booth where the Democratic Party candidate for president stood for the things that Kucinich was saying and a lot of the things Dean was saying. I mean, one day we can get to that point.
Well, and in some states, we're there. Jeff, we've only got a minute left. We got another caller, Spackler in Milwaukee's on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. I know you have a question for Jeff.
Real quick, I was at the 95th birthday party for Progressive Magazine on Saturday, and Ben, I think Mansky was his name, was there from the Green Party, and there was a discussion about the 2004 election. And he basically, his reason for when people kept bringing it up that, you know, the Green Party should, you know, take over the Democratic Party was it wasn't probable. And I didn't get a chance to ask him, well, does he think it's probable that they're going to get somebody elected? You know, and even if they do, get anything done at all at that point?
Yeah.
I think it's very probable. If you look at the Democratic Party in many places, it's a shell. It doesn't have any
president.
It doesn't have any activists.
No, but the president reflects the whole grassroots thing. I mean, you know, it all literally is one of those pyramids that starts from the bottom up.
And that's right. And remember that the Progressive magazine, which has often been an endorser of third parties, they've written an editorial this time saying the top priority, the top priority for progressives in this election is to
get out
send
Bush.
Bush back to Texas.
Yeah. Amen. Well said. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Jeff Cohen. Jeff, is there a website I can point people to? Oh, I guess Jeff really and truly has gone. Anyhow, thank you. Thank you, Jeff. 29 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Investors lost billions in the financial accounting fraud of Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and other corporate scandals. Finally, they'll receive some compensation for their losses. The world's largest financial services company, Citigroup, has agreed to pay $1.6 billion after taxes to settle a class action lawsuit brought by WorldCom investors. However, as part of the agreement, Citigroup denies ever having violated the law.
In hopes of keeping her out of prison, lawyers for Martha Stewart plan to argue that if she does time, it will cost people their jobs. A report in the Wall Street Journal says this tactic apparently has precedent and was successfully applied in a 1995 corporate crime case. Just how many of the 500 Martha Stewart living OmniMedia employees might get the axe if the company's founder goes to prison hasn't been disclosed. She faces up to 16 months on conspiracy and obstruction of justice convictions related to insider trading of stock in a biotechnology company. Stewart's sentencing is scheduled for June 17th.
New legislation introduced by Senator Edward Kennedy in the House Democratic Caucus, entitled the Safe, Orderly, Legal Visas and Enforcement Act of 2004, would allow long-term undocumented workers to become legal permanent residents and establish a process to reunite immigrant families. It would include a provision allowing immigrant workers who are illegally fired for trying to form a union to win back all their lost wages. If passed, the bill would overturn a Supreme Court decision which found providing back pay to an undocumented worker conflicts with U.S. immigration law.
Tractors and big rigs may become roadblocks on wheels in the U.K. this summer if farmers and truck drivers vent their frustration about rising fuel prices. With the global price of crude hovering around $40 a barrel, the British-based Farmers for Action says it's mobilizing members around the country for protests. The group conducted rolling blockades of fuel depots in 2000 on similar grievances and brought the U.K. very close to running out of gas as a result.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a study out of Maryland and McGill Universities, mothers who have a job outside of the home have 13% less free time than mothers who work exclusively at home. In addition, they also spend less time with their children, sleeping, doing housework, and report always feeling rushed 25% more. However, they do feel slightly more satisfied.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Harbin, 27 minutes before the hour. In a visit to a business owned by a top Republican campaign donor yesterday, Dick Cheney said White House tax policy was working for all Americans and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Well, according to a poll last week, 90% of Americans say they have felt little or no federal tax cut, and they're paying more in state and local taxes. On the wage front, same situation. According to the Center for American Progress, Bloomberg reports that while U.S. corporate profits surged 87%, put that number in your mind, between 2001 and 2003, this is what George Bush brought to America, an 87% increase in corporate profits. What did they do with that money? They created jobs in China. They created jobs in India. They created jobs in Mexico. An 87% increase in corporate profits between 2001 and 2003. How much did wages and salaries go up for that two-and-a-half-year, three-year period? Well, given that the rate of inflation was about 2%, you would expect that it would be, if they were totally flat over 2.5 years, you'd expect it to be about 5%, 3 years, 6%. Actually, 4.5%, the smallest for the first 9 quarters of any recovery since World War II. And so what does the administration do about this? Do they say, gee, we've got a situation here where the corporate fat cats are getting incredibly rich, people who make their living sitting around the pool waiting for their dividend checks to arrive only have to pay 15% income tax now, no payroll tax whatsoever. But the workers are getting screwed. The workers are getting shafted. The workers are on the outside looking in. What should we do about this? Well, the administration, they made a decision. They came to a conclusion. They said, what, you know, this is something we can handle. They reduced overtime pay protections for millions of workers. They actually did start talking about the virtues of Walmart. Yes, Walmart is a great thing for the American economy. As the Washington Post notes, while the president wraps his economic policy in talk of rewarding hard work and initiative, his agenda has done exactly the opposite, rewarding the owners of vast wealth while squeezing the middle class. You know, I've been telling you this for, we're in our second year of this. This is the conservative agenda. There's all this rhetoric about, religion and prayer and schools and not burning flags and blah, 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 and it's all window dressing. I mean, yeah, there are some people who are very passionate about those issues. They are cynically being brought along for the ride. The real conservative agenda is an economic one. It has to do with returning feudalism to the world and the corporations rising up as the new feudal lords. We're in charge here now, they'll say. The Center for American Progress notes, the administration is now putting its soak the rich ideology into overdrive. Soak the rich? I don't think so. As Daniel Altman notes, the White House is seeking tax reforms that would make it more attractive to accumulate, soak the poor. It's actually soak the rich in wealth, like sort of like soaking in your hot tub, you know. The White House is seeking tax reforms that would make it more attractive to accumulate wealth than to spend money. Think about that for a minute. You want an economy that works? The White House's proposals for tax-free savings accounts for the wealthy would, quote, give people every incentive to receive all their income from financial assets rather than wages and salaries, end quote. So let's have a policy where everybody who makes their living off a trust fund like George W. Bush or off a $23.8 million severage package from Halliburton like Dick Cheney or off a family fortune of the tens to hundreds of millions of dollars from taking
nonprofit community hospitals, turning them for-profit and squeezing blood out of their patients like Bill Frist's family did. Let's make a tax policy. Let's change policy in the United States so the people who live on trust funds and family fortunes and big, you know, investments from their buyouts from CEO from being CEO of Halliburton, that those folks are the ones who are incentivized and everybody else is discouraged. Let's create a policy in the United States where we reward people who sit on their butts and receive a check every month in the mail from their dividends, and let's penalize people who actually work for a living. Sound reasonable to you? It sounds reasonable to the White House. The White House's proposals for tax-free savings accounts for the wealthy would give people every incentive to receive all their income from financial assets rather than wages and salaries. Ultimately, the policy could lead to a whole new way of classifying people. Working and upper class would be replaced by taxpayer and free rider. Titans of industry, heirs and heiresses, wizards of Wall Street, they're not going to pay for national defense. They're not going to help out paying for our roads. They're not going to pay for our schools. They're not going to pay for cancer research. They're not going to finance sending George Bush to Mars. That's a thought for you. All those costs would be borne by America's breadwinners, as they are increasingly. Almost half of the total tax burden paid in the United States right now is paid by people who pay the payroll tax. That's people who make less than $90,000 a year. Just the payroll tax itself. 45 or 47% of the total tax revenues now. The conservatives in the Senate are so completely disconnected from this, as David Sirota notes, the Center for American Progress. In two recent instances, Senate of conservatives have shown just how out of touch they are. Last week, they were pushing a bill providing more massive tax breaks to large corporations. And they tried to stop a bill that would preserve current overtime regulations instead of reducing them as the White House proposes. Fortunately, the bill passed the Senate. And now this week, on the same corporate tax bill, Congress Daily reports the conservatives are still threatening to block a vote on extending unemployment insurance despite a record number of Americans exhausting their unemployment benefit. Have you noticed that unemployment seems to be going down? Well, yeah, we, you know, 300,000 jobs were created last month. I had the, yeah, here it is right here. Isn't it wonderful? Get this. 100,000 jobs in construction, 112,000 jobs in bars and restaurants, 157,000 jobs in retail. You want to work for Walmart? 100,000 jobs in health care? You want to be an orderly? How many, 64,000 temporary help jobs? How many manufacturing jobs were created? Out of that 300,000 that Bush is running around, they're waving that number around. You know, really, truly good-paying jobs. 27,000. 0.2% change in manufacturing. Yeah. So unemployment is going down. The number, the unemployment figure is going down. Because what's happening is people are running out of unemployment benefits. Their unemployment insurance is exhausted. And once your unemployment insurance is exhausted, you know, there's a period there for, it depends on the state, 3 months, 6 months, where you're still considered unemployed. And after that, if you don't have a job, they call you a discouraged worker. And they say, well, he's no longer in the job marketplace. So in 2001, and typically this whole process takes anywhere from a year to 2 years. From the time you're first unemployed until you're no longer counted at all. Well, we've had George Bush's wonderful tax policies now for 2.5 years. And sure enough, the official unemployment rate, although the number of people who are unemployed last month actually went up. Yes, more jobs were created and the number of unemployed people went up. Why? Well, because there's people coming into the job market. Our population is growing, both because of immigration and because people are having babies, or 20 years ago they were having babies. And now those kids are graduating from high school or college, and they're out there looking for jobs. And increasingly, you have people looking for second and third jobs because their first job just doesn't pay enough to survive. And so what happens? The unemployment figures go down. The numbers of people counted as unemployed are dropping, but the number of people who don't have a job is actually increasing. And of those who do have jobs, how many of them can, as my father could, as families could in the 1950s and 1960s, raise an entire family on a single salary and have a retirement and have health care? How many people can do that now? What percentage of the American workforce? It's very, very small. I think we're down to 11% of our workforce is unionized. Probably somewhere between 10 and 15, maybe 20% of our workforce can actually say that, can actually do that. And you say, well, what about all these McMansions? You see all these fancy houses, all these people? Well, they are in debt up to their eyeballs. There's a reason why you watch TV for any given hour or two, you're going to see the ads from the defense contractors because they don't want the networks to say anything bad about them or about war. You're going to see ads from oil companies because they don't want the networks in their news to report anything bad about them or their oil policies or prices. You're going to see ads from the drug companies for drugs. In some cases, they don't even tell you the name of the drug. Some of it is designed to drive sales of the drug. Much of it is designed to make sure that the media never criticizes for the pharmaceutical industry. You know, heaven forbid, if we had national health care, all these drug companies would stop advertising and the media would lose hundreds of millions of dollars a year. They don't want that to happen. You think your local TV station is going to editorialize against pharmaceutical companies? I don't think so. And finally, you see the ads where they're actually trying to get customers. And what are the majority of those there for? Refinance your home. People think they own their houses. The bank does. And the refi company, Ditech.com and whatnot. Yes, refinance your home with us. LendingTree.com. On and on they go. I mean, I'm not knocking them. There's a market there, and they're taking advantage of it. That's what you do in America. But should so many people be so desperate to squeeze the last little bit of equity out of their homes just to get by for another year? Is that the kind of country we want? Is that what the founders fought and died for? That is not the historic vision of America. You know, I find it particularly interesting that back in the 50s, and if you watched the Jackie Gleason show or the Lucy show, what you saw were then working class, middle class people living in, you know, Jackie Gleason, Jackie and Alice, they lived in a third or fourth floor, what was called a cold water walk-up. You had to heat your own water. There was no elevator in the building. Ralph Cramden, the guy who lived just above them, he worked in the sewers. No, Ralph Cramden was Jackie Gleason's character, wasn't he? The other guy, I forget his name. And Jackie Gleason's character was a bus driver. These were the heroes of America, average working people. And now what do you see? You look at a sitcom and you see people, you know, living in million-dollar houses, multi-million-dollar homes. The rest of the world thinks that's how all of America lives. And you see them, you know, they have a life. Friends, Frasier. Oh, they have a life. And people sit there watching and they don't have a life. It's like, this is a tragedy. So what is the problem here? What is the real problem? Well, as reported last week, Michigan State Republican Chairwoman Betsy DeVos said many, if not most, of the economic problems in Michigan are the result of high wages. Yeah. See, the cons get this all across the country. High wages, that's the problem. While the Bush administration has refused to consider legislation to address the negative effects of offshoring, A new poll finds that actually many corporate executives would even appreciate this. They're getting tired of the grief that they're taking. They got to do it in order to compete, but hey, let's change the rules of the game. That's what government is about. Government is we, the people, defining the rules of the games of life, the game of business. You know, how do we conduct ourselves? What are we going to allow? What are we not going to allow? So let's just change the rules and say, hey, you want to send a job to India? That's fine. You can hire somebody over there for $2 an hour. But you have to pay a $10 an hour tax, a tariff on that labor. Remember, we've done this for 200 years. Why don't we go back to it? You know, Ronald Reagan started unwinding it. Bill Clinton took it completely apart. George Bush turned it into a campaign. Now, 40% of executives in the technology sector say that they would support paying higher taxes to compensate for jobs they send offshore. A per-head tax for every position sent to another country. Can you get this? 40% of CEOs now are they're getting it. Hey, this is America. Let's work for Americans. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Stay tuned.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Climate change has caught the attention of Hollywood movie makers and Pentagon planners. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the day after tomorrow opens on Memorial Day weekend, moviegoers will see climate change on the big screen. The film depicts spectacular weather events culminating in a new ice age. Far-fetched? Not according to a recent Pentagon study, which looked at a range of climate scenarios. It included a possible future of large-scale disaster and social chaos. Ross Gelbspan says we shouldn't need these extreme depictions to see the dangers of climate change. Gelbspan is the author of a book called The Heat Is On.
What bothers me a little bit is that people are not being asked to look at the slow, gradual, on-the-ground climate changes we're seeing right now. What the Pentagon did that I think was particularly valuable was to essentially recategorize global warming not as an environmental problem, but now as a national security threat. But I also think there are a lot of things happening on the ground in a sort of less spectacular way that also are national security threats.
For example, Gelbspan says the world has consumed more food than it's produced 4 years in a row. But he says the media don't report a clear link to climate change. Take last summer's European heat wave, which killed as many as 35,000 people. Gelbspan says temperatures didn't cool down much at night, a sign of global warming.
So as a result, we had all these fatalities in Europe because people whose bodies were sort of heat-stressed by the daily heat waves didn't get the nighttime cooling to allow them to recuperate. That's one very vivid sign, and I don't think the press did a good job on picking up on that.
Gelbspan says Hollywood movies and Pentagon studies might open some eyes, but he says a climate disaster is already underway. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. And Kate in Arcata, California is on the line. Hey, Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I have a kind of a comment I'd like you to comment on after I say it, and I'll try to make it quick so you have plenty of time. It seems to me that Bush is a follower and not a leader, and that his he's too naive and unsophisticated enough to really back, even to understand that he's backing by his choice of a vice president, the corporate agenda. That Bush's agenda is evangelical.
Yeah.
And that that he is actually representing a representative of the evangelical right-wing community that backs Bush. Let's see. Let me try to get to the point here.
Well, there's a reason why Ralph Reed, when Bush was elected, said that he was stepping down as leader of the Christian coalition. He said that,
yes,
you know, that the leader is now in the White House, and he was not being facetious.
Exactly. I don't think Bush even knows that he's a pawn of the corporate structure, and that
well, I think it's just fine with him. I mean, you know, his grandfather was an investment banker who helped fund Hitler and lost, you know, part of his bank, the Union Bank, as a result of Roosevelt outing him. He comes from great wealth.
Yeah,
and
well,
I just don't think he has a sense of what it means to work for a living. He's never experienced it. His grandfather didn't experience it.
He doesn't have a sense of history, so his sense of mission is what drives him.
Right.
And that the corporate agenda is happening in because of his lack of sophistication and his lack of really understanding what's going on.
Well, I would go farther than that. I would say that even if he was sufficiently sophisticated to really understand that this is a new form of feudalism and what's going on,
right,
he would probably support it because he subscribes to the fundamental conservative notion that there are classes and orders in society and that there is a ruling elite and they should be the ones who have power because they're
okay,
the better
Okay, well,
people.
That was going to be my question to you. Do you think he's really subscribing to this?
Oh, yeah.
Or he's just too dumb to know that it's going
on? I think not only does he subscribe to it, but, I mean, you know, read Russell Kirk's 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, which is still cited as the foundation of conservative thought. This is one of the foundational principles of conservative thinking, is that there are classes and orders in society. I mean, it goes all the way back to Alexander Hamilton. But before that, it goes back to Edmund Burke. And that's just, you know, that's part of their belief system.
That's a great answer. Thanks for I'll go to read that stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Kate. I appreciate the call. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Investors lost billions in the financial accounting fraud of Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and other corporate scandals. Finally, they'll receive some compensation for their losses. The world's largest financial services company, Citigroup, has agreed to pay $1.6 billion after taxes to settle a class action lawsuit brought by WorldCom investors. However, as part of the agreement, Citigroup denies ever having violated the law.
In hopes of keeping her out of prison, lawyers from Martha Stewart plan to argue that if she does time, it will cost people their jobs. A report in the Wall Street Journal says this tactic apparently has precedent and was successfully applied in a 1995 corporate crime case. Just how many of the 500 Martha Stewart living OmniMedia employees might get the axe if the company's founder goes to prison hasn't been disclosed. She faces up to 16 months on conspiracy and obstruction of justice convictions related to insider trading of stock in a biotechnology company. Stewart's sentencing is scheduled for June 17th.
New legislation introduced by Senator Edward Kennedy and the House Democratic Caucus, entitled the Safe, Orderly, Legal Visas and Enforcement Act of 2004, would allow long-term undocumented workers to become legal permanent residents and establish a process to reunite immigrant families. It would include a provision allowing immigrant workers who are illegally fired for trying to form a union to win back all their lost wages. If passed, the bill would overturn a Supreme Court decision which found providing back pay to an undocumented worker conflicts with U.S. immigration law.
Tractors and big rigs may become roadblocks on wheels in the U.K. this summer if farmers and truck drivers vent their frustration about rising fuel prices. With the global price of crude hovering around $40 a barrel, the British-based Farmers for Action says it's mobilizing members around the country for protests. The group conducted rolling blockades of fuel depots in 2000 on similar grievances and brought the U.K. very close to running out of gas as a result.
Today's Dow Bob Report. According to a study out of Maryland and McGill Universities, mothers who have a job outside of the home have 13% less free time than mothers who work exclusively at home. In addition, they also spend less time with their children, sleeping, doing housework, and report always feeling rushed 25% more. However, they do feel slightly more satisfied.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high-tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high-tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, now we know. George C. Marshall, the architect of victory in World War II as defense secretary under Roosevelt and Truman, George C. Marshall was not that good a secretary of defense, according to George Bush. Rumstud, Bush's little nickname for Rummy, I kid you not, Rumstud is the best secretary of defense the United States has ever had. Yes, he led us into a war. In the last 10 years or so, we've had, what, three wars? We were in Bosnia. How many soldiers did we lose in combat? None. We were in Kosovo. How many soldiers did we lose in combat? None. Why? Because we were following the Powell Doctrine. Well, and we had the 1991 Gulf War. I frankly don't know the number of soldiers we lost, but it was very, very small. And why? Because of the Powell Doctrine. Colin Powell was in charge. He was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He said, overwhelming force. If you're going to fight a war, do it right. Well, Powell kind of got pushed out of the way, and Rummy got in, and Rummy says, we can do this thing on the cheap. He ignores history. I mean, this is ultimately, this is what cost Hitler World War II, is he, you know, he invaded Russia. There are a lot of Germans who will tell you, a lot of historians who will tell you, that if Hitler had just waited a year before he invaded Russia, he may have ended up winning the war. Or if he had been able to get the oil from the Middle East and from North Africa that Rommel and Mueller and those guys were down there trying to get. So anyhow, Rummy says, Georgie said, President Bush says, Rumsfeld is the best Secretary of Defense the United States has ever had. At the same time, we discover that there is a profound anger building in the United States Army against Rumsfeld. People are really upset that he 700 people dead, 14,000 now medically evacuated, some 2,000 missing limbs, eyes, ears, having to have their faces rebuilt, all because of the Rumsfeld Doctrine. Oh, you know, you invade a country and the people don't like it. Well, that's just untidy. War is untidy. You know, as the Center for American Progress points out in the Progress Report today, top officials in the Bush administration predicted that we would be greeted by Iraqis as liberators with sweets and flowers. Thus, the military was not prepared for the harsh realities on the ground, was forced to rely on civilian contractors to conduct the intelligence and interrogation work. By the way, if you have thoughts on this or any other topic, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Now the military's reliance on civilians to serve as interrogators and translators in Iraq is so great that many people are being sent abroad without complete background investigations or full qualifications for the positions. While on the job in Iraq, many of the contractors are barely supervised. You see that thing on the news the other day where they were showing the help wanted ad? You know, you too can be a prison guard or an interrogator. You too can be an interrogator in Iraq. And it says minimal supervision. Oh yeah, that's the kind of job some folks want. Two such contractors have been implicated in the Abu Ghraib prison abuses. You're not hearing much about them, though. Why? Because it might look bad for privatization. And the cons, the Republicans, are all gung-ho about privatization, but so are a lot of the Democrats. They're getting money from these same folks. So here we have a situation where the Pentagon has, you know, utterly and absolutely failed to plan for the aftermath of the war. Well, actually, they tried to. You know, Shinseki, when he was in the Pentagon, he said, you know, no, wait a minute, you guys. And they said, okay, you're out of here. Zinni, we're going to need more troops. No, you're out of here. So we didn't plan for the aftermath or the chaos that resulted. And so now you've got the Army Times. I read that to you yesterday, the Army Times editorializing that this is really Don Rumsfeld's fault. They said, and I quote, prison abuse was not just a failure of leadership at the local command level. It was a failure that ran straight to the top. And yet, at the same time, yesterday, Bush patting Rumsfeld on the head. Rumsfeld. He's doing a superb job. America owes him a debt of gratitude. A major supplier of translators for the military, the Titan Corporation of San Diego, hires individuals with unlikely professional backgrounds, like taxi drivers, for positions in Iraq and elsewhere. A taxi driver Titan hired to work in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, was arrested on charges of espionage last year. Another Titan translator, a man with no security clearance who was working with interrogators trying to obtain sensitive information from prisoners in Abu Ghraib, has been implicated in the prison abuse case. Yes, taxi drivers, that's what we need. We need some good taxi drivers to conduct interrogations. You know, the reason for this is that is that the conservative agenda of privatization is you know, going full tilt boogie, full steam, and it's, you know, take it away from government. You know, these people could be hired as civil servants. You wouldn't have to pay them $110,000 a year like some of these large corporations are doing. And, of course, the corporation is marking that up. If they're paying somebody $100,000 a year, you can bet they're charging you and me, we the taxpayers, $200,000 a year. The average income for a military household is $3,300 a month. George Bush has tried to reduce that by cutting down imminent danger pay, combat pay, from $225 a month to $150 a month. Private contractors, however, they don't make $3,300 a month. They can make up to $1,500 a day. Industry can afford to pay excessive salaries because up to 30% of the $87.5 billion supplemental appropriations law passed in November will find its way to guess who? Private contractors. It's far from certain that civilian contractors involved in the prison abuse will ever be brought to justice. This is probably another reason why there was almost no discussion of these guys, at least up until the noon Eastern time hour in the interrogations of General Taguba. I just, you know, I didn't hear a word about the, well, maybe one or two words. I mean, nobody was pushing this thing. What about these contractors? Who are they? How come they're running the show? What's their background? Who's holding them accountable? It may well be that nobody can hold them accountable. The Civilian Provisional Authority, led by Paul Bremer. By the way, here's something to try and wrap your mind around. The Civilian Provisional Authority, the CPA, Paul Bremer's group there in Iraq, there is no act of Congress that ever authorized its existence. And there is no Iraqi law that authorizes its existence. And it's not part of the American military. In other words, it is not a legal entity. It's just there. Not answerable to Congress. Only answerable to George Bush and Dick Cheney. Said, well, we'll put these guys here. Anyhow, the Civilian Provisional Authority, led by Paul Bremer, issued an order last year that protected civilian contractors, quote, from local criminal prosecutions, even for crimes such as murder, torture, and rape, end quote. The U.S. Constitution prohibits private contractors from being brought before military tribunals. While the contractors involved in the abuse at Abu Ghraib could theoretically be prosecuted in United States civilian courts, Attorney General John Ashcroft, quote, has not indicated that he actually plans to bring such cases, end quote. In fact, Ashcroft has not even sent one single FBI agent. Ashcroft is the only guy who could prosecute these guys. The Justice Department is the only agency that might be able to prosecute them. Has Ashcroft sent an FBI agent over to Iraq to check it out? To find out what's going on? No. No, in fact, he said, federal prosecutors will await the result of the Pentagon's investigation. But the Pentagon investigators are gathering evidence to prosecute a military court-martial. This is a whole different thing than a civilian trial. They're gathering a different kind of evidence. They're looking at different kinds of events. It just is not the same. There are other logistical problems. Who would, for example, bring the victims to the United States to testify? 1-866-889-8894. Roberta in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta, what's up?
I am Curious Yellow. Remember that movie?
I do. I'm that old.
60s.
Yeah, I'm. I
think it's time to. Wouldn't it be interesting to bring that back and take a better look at this? It was rather an obscure thesis. I thought, as Swedish films usually are, but
you know,
a nonviolent military.
Yeah, I never saw the
movie.
For
defense only.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to say, though, 2 points. you know, the woman who called about Bush, giving him credit for some naivete and sincerity along evangelism. Fascism has always survived has always needed with God on our side. I mean, Bob Dylan even wrote the song, so he's just dancing to the party tune.
Well, Adolf Hitler put it on the belt buckles. The belt buckles of the German army said, in Gottes Namen, in God's name.
Yeah, it's such a travesty. And I think that was absolutely seen through by the Pope when he called Bush the Antichrist. And, of course,
Wait a minute. The Pope called Bush the Antichrist? Roberta, hang on. Did you just say the Pope called Bush the Antichrist?
Yes, he did.
When did that happen?
Well, if you look it up on Pax Christi or some religious .com, it was verified. But Mark Crispin Miller first mentioned it. It happened before the war. He worked very hard against this war, and he is said to be very saddened by his own impediments and infirmities, because if he weren't so old, he really believes that this is leading to the Armageddon in the Bible. And
well, that's what Bush believes, too.
Definitely the Antichrist, and he wishes he could do more about it.
That's interesting. I mean, many of the evangelicals around George believe that these are the last days, and that's what they're supposed to be doing, is bringing it about. So. Anyhow, thank you, Roberta, for the call. 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Program. You're in the center of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations and stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I read their exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy.
He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
All the eclipses as we watch you die. All we can do is echo your anguish cries. Still, as all human feelings die, we are
welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Let's play Jeopardy. You know, the Beltway Jeopardy kicks off on ABC tonight. It's, Tucker Carlson is going to be on there, the notorious right-wing crank from the Crossfire program. And so a couple of Jeopardy questions here. Of course, with Jeopardy, you give the answer first, and then you have to guess the question. So here's the answer. 12,301,650. What's the question? 12,301,650. Well, here's a clue. You can break out the answer as Arizona, 779,000. Florida, 2.7 million. Iowa, 248,000. Louisiana, 840,000. Maine, 137,000. Michigan, 1,093,000. Minnesota, 388,000. Missouri, 609,000, Nevada, 357,000, New Hampshire, 119,000, New Mexico, 380,000, Ohio, 1,300,000, Oregon, 468,000, Pennsylvania, 1,264,000, Washington, 807,000, West Virginia, 251,000, and Wisconsin, 466,000. Total 12,301,650. What is the question? The question is, what is the number of uninsured Americans in battleground states under George W. Bush? Here's another one for those of you who like to play at home. The answer, 1,318,864. That question, what is the number of Americans living in battleground states who lost their health coverage under George W. Bush? 1,318,864. Now, in the midst of that, and that's just in the battleground states, in the midst of that, a few weeks after this, from the Associated Press, an article by Sharon Themer, a few weeks after the Bush administration named Medco to be one of the first Medicare drug card providers, something that will no doubt make a few bucks for the company, a company executive helped throw a $100,000 fundraiser for the president that was headlined by Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson. The role of Medco Specialty Pharmacy Services President Alan Lotvin, a co-chairman of the mid-April event in New Jersey, is just one of the ways, writes the Associated Press, prescription drug card providers have reached out to Washington politicians over the past 2 years. In all, companies that want approval from Tommy Thompson's department, the Bush administration, to be the first Medicare drug discount providers, spent at least $35 million lobbying in 2003, and their executives and lobbyists donated or raised hundreds of thousands of dollars more for Bush's reelection, according to the Associated Press. Democratic rival John Kerry received a much smaller amount from the same group. Lotvin's parent company, pharmaceutical benefit manager Medco Health Solutions, and its then-owner, pharmaceutical giant Merck, together spent about $9 million on lobbying in the Capitol last year. Merck spun off Medco as a separate company last summer. The This is just incredible. The political donations of these companies that are making out like bandits under this Medicare bill. It is just absolutely mind-boggling, the amount of money they gave and how much of it they gave to the Bush campaign and how little of it they gave to Democrats. I've got a short list here. It'll take about a minute and a half to go through it, so it's just a quick bit of information. But we got to take a break right now. I will do it right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back. Our number, by the way, if you'd like to call, 1-866-889-8894. Stay tuned. This is the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Investors lost billions in the financial accounting fraud of Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and other corporate scandals. Finally, they'll receive some compensation for their losses. The world's largest financial services company, Citigroup, has agreed to pay $1.6 billion after taxes to settle a class action lawsuit brought by WorldCom investors. However, as part of the agreement, Citigroup denies ever having violated the law.
In hopes of keeping her out of prison, lawyers from Martha Stewart plan to argue that if she does time, it will cost people their jobs. A report in the Wall Street Journal says this tactic apparently has precedent and was successfully applied in a 1995 corporate crime case. Just how many of the 500 Martha Stewart living OmniMedia employees might get the axe if the company's founder goes to prison hasn't been disclosed. She faces up to 16 months on conspiracy and obstruction of justice convictions related to insider trading of stock in a biotechnology company. Stewart's sentencing is scheduled for June 17th.
New legislation introduced by Senator Edward Kennedy in the House Democratic Caucus, entitled the Safe, Orderly, Legal Visas and Enforcement Act of 2004, would allow long-term undocumented workers to become legal permanent residents and establish a process to reunite immigrant families. It would include a provision allowing immigrant workers who are illegally fired for trying to form a union to win back all their lost wages. If passed, the bill would overturn a Supreme Court decision which found providing back pay to an undocumented worker conflicts with U.S. immigration law.
Tractors and big rigs may become roadblocks on wheels in the UK this summer if farmers and truck drivers vent their frustration about rising fuel prices. With the global price of crude hovering around $40 a barrel, the British-based Farmers for Action says it's mobilizing members around the country for protests. The group conducted rolling blockades of fuel depots in 2000 on similar grievances and brought the UK very close to running out of gas as a result.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a study out of Maryland and McGill Universities, mothers who have a job outside of the home have 13% less free time than mothers who work exclusively at home. In addition, they also spend less time with their children, sleeping, doing housework, and report always feeling rushed 25% more. However, they do feel slightly more satisfied.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this town, he's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right.
Amen. I'd say the same of my father. Hey, welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. I just have to share these numbers. This is just mind-boggling. This is just from the Associated Press. This isn't the left-wing media. Well, you know, of course, the hypercons think everything is the left-wing media, but this is just a straight-up story. In addition to Merck and Medco, others with seven-figure lobbying expenses in 2003 included Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, $9.5 million, Aetna, $3.7 million, United Healthcare, $2 million, Pacific Care, $2.1 million, and WellPoint Health Networks, $1.7 million. Some lobbyists who helped the companies make their case in Washington last year have strong ties to the Bush campaign or administration. This is the understatement of the century. Folks, the understatement of the century. For example, Pacific Care's lobbyists last year included Tom Leffler, who raised at least $200,000 for Bush's 2004 campaign, and Jack Howard, a former White House employee who worked as deputy assistant to the president for legislative affairs. Company executives have also played a role in the Bush campaign. United Health Group's chairman and chief executive, William McGuire, earned the label Bush Pioneer by raising at least $100,000 for Bush's campaign. As did Todd Farah, chairman and CEO of WellCare Health Plans, and Samuel Skinner, a member of card provider Express Scripts Board of Directors. See, these are all the folks who are making out like bandits from the Medicare bill. The political donations, here's another one, Michael Hightower, he collected $200,000 for the Bush campaign. He's a ranger, vice president of government relations for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida. The political donations of company employees that won the prescription cards overwhelmingly favored Bush. Let me give you some examples. United Healthcare employees donated roughly $59,000 to Bush, $5,500 to Kerry. WellCare employees gave roughly $22,000 to Bush's campaign and no money to Kerry. This is where the company goes to their individual employees, an individual person. You know, you can't give more than $2,000. This is hard money. And many people only give, you know, 50 or 100 or 200 or whatever. So they go to their employees and they say, cough up. WellCare employees gave roughly $22,000 to Bush. Kerry, zip, zero, nada, niet, nothing, not a penny. Aetna workers gave $16,000 to Bush and $1,000 to Kerry. Kerry spokesman Chad Clanton said, again, one of the great understatements. Under this president, the cost of health insurance and prescription drugs have gone sky high. He's taken money from the drug companies hand over fist and put protecting their profits before cutting costs for consumers. It's interesting, the picture on this thing, this AP story, is you got a picture of George Bush, and he looks like he's about to bite your leg. I mean, he's got one of those really wild looks on his face. Well, speaking of the Bush administration, this from the New York Times yesterday, the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now the SEC. It's funny. The Securities and Exchange Commission has an interesting history. Back, you know, I don't have the paperwork in front of me. I wrote about this in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, so it's been a few years. But a fellow by the name of Ponzi came over to the United States from Italy. He was an Italian immigrant, and he set up a shop. I can't remember his first name. I'm sorry. He set up a shop in downtown Boston, in a little back street called Pie Alley, and said that this was during World War One, or just after World War One, in the 1920s, early 1920s, and said that he was buying up. Postal coupons, basically stamps, from European countries. And the European countries, of course, after the war, particularly Italy and Germany, were experiencing terrible inflation. And he said he was buying up their postage stamps and selling them in the United States at, if a stamp was, You know, it used to cost 15 cents to mail a letter. Well, at this point in Germany, it cost, you know, $150 to mail a letter. So he'd buy up a $150 postage stamp, bring it to the United States, and then claim that he'd sell it for $150, right? Which doesn't make any sense. But people believed him. And he said, if you invest with me, you'll get a 50% return on your money in 2 months. And people did. They gave him their money. And sure enough, 2 months later, he gave them their, you know, half again more back. And they said, well, this is cool. And they started telling their friends. At one point, he was taking in so much money, he had 15 full-time people just sitting there counting cash. Was his name Alfred Ponzi? Albert Ponzi? Anyway. And what he was doing, of course, is he was paying off the early investors with profits from the late investors' investments. And eventually the thing collapsed, but he called it the SEC. Now, I'm sorry, I don't remember what that stood for at the time. It was secure. I know it started out with secure. Anyhow, he called it the SEC. So, in an ironic twist, as a result of Ponzi's scheme, his SEC on Pi Alley in Boston in the 1920s, the president tapped, of all people, Joe Kennedy, to oversee how business conducted itself and created the first actual Securities and Exchange Commission, what we now call the SEC. And the SEC is now, you know, come under intense pressure from businesses and some members of the Bush administration, writes Stephen Labaton, the New York Times, to water down proposed rule changes in the way corporate boards are elected, mutual funds are governed, and hedge funds are regulated. Now, that all sounds kind of strange and obscure, and I'm not going to get into all the minutiae of it, but here's the bottom line. In the wake of all these corporate scandals, the SEC is actually trying to do something right. They're actually trying to make it harder for corporations to rip off investors. And the Bush administration is trying to water these things down. The proposals, which flow from scandals in the mutual fund industry and at some of the nation's largest corporations, have split the agency largely along partisan lines. The two Democrats, see, it's just like the FCC all over again. The two Democratic commissioners support them. The two Republicans have expressed skepticism about them. And the swing vote is in the hands of the agency's chairman, William H. Donaldson, a Bush appointee. Senior commission official said, on each of the issues, the chairman is under immense political and industry pressure. The heaviest pressure has been coming in the proxy battle, where the views of the administration, eager to court chief executives during an election year, have been made clear to the chairman. George needs that money from the CEOs. Now, the biggest group that's pushing to dilute these changes is the Business Roundtable. Business Roundtable is a group of the CEOs of the 100 largest companies in America. Guess who was the president of the CEO 2 years ago? The guy who's right now our Treasury Secretary, John Snow. And he's lobbying against these rule changes. And then Alan Greenspan got into the act. He says this is going to lead to more intrusive regulation. Yes, friends, what's good for billionaires is good for the Bushes, but it's not good for you or me. It's not good for the average investor. Basically, what they're saying is they want to allow the mutual funds to continue skimming and scamming people in ways that you can never figure out because it's too complicated, all the fine print. They want to continue to allow boards of directors to keep shoveling huge cash amounts of cash at themselves and their CEOs with no accountability. And the Bush administration says That's fine. We don't really want these rule changes. The SEC is saying, hey, we got a real problem here with governance, corporate governance in America. We need to change some things. And Bush and Greenspan and Snow are all saying, no, I don't think so. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I want to address kind of an American cultural situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked about, you know, the legislative and all, you know, the technical aspects of democracy and stuff. But there's this tendency in American culture, well, let's just move on. Let's just move on. And we've accumulated so many, you know, sins in our history that we just keep on moving on. I mean, these guys, they need to go to jail.
Yeah, well, which guys in particular are you talking about?
Rumsfeld, all these guys, they need to go to jail.
Yeah, I mean, this is why there's that clause in the Constitution that says that if elected officials commit high crimes or misdemeanors, they can be impeached. Unfortunately.
Well, no, not just impeachment. I mean, impeachment and go and live in retirement on, you know, on his ranch in Crawford. No. No, these guys need to go to jail. I mean, this is criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike, on the one hand, I absolutely agree with you that it's criminal. On the other hand, here's the unfortunate reality.
That's the part with American culture that just irks me. It's so peaceful animus, this culture.
I absolutely
just let this stuff slide.
I agree. And hang on just a second. Here's the problem. What they're doing is legal. So rather than going after them, and you know, I'm just as outraged as you are about it. That's why I'm talking about it on the radio today. But rather than going after them, what we need to go after is the rules. Hey, we need to change the rules of the game of business in America. And in order to do that, we have to get corporate money out of governance. And in order to do that, we've got to take back the Democratic Party, kick out the Democratic Leadership Council. You know, a lot of people...
courage in our culture.
Yeah, a lot of people...
You
know,
we can't just blame them. We're the people.
Yeah, and most, but see, the thing is,
people.
But most people don't even understand, you know, yeah, when I heard Al Franken the other day say, I'm a DLC Democrat, I'm going, what? You know, the Democratic Leadership Council, these are the guys who are, this is the corporate agenda within the Democratic Party. This is, you know, these are the guys who are bringing us down, and we must get politically active.
They need to go
active.
To jail.
Yeah, but see, there's no law to put them in jail right now, Mike. What they're doing is legal.
I mean, torture, there's the Cheney Energy Commission. I mean, there's just so many crimes that they're committing. That, I mean, what do you mean they can't go to jail?
Well, it's not a crime until you can get somebody to prosecute them.
Yeah, it is a crime, and you know, somebody needs to prosecute, and people need to be more outraged and not be such a pusillanimous culture.
I absolutely agree, and the way to make that happen is to get back to at least a bipartisan state in Washington, D.C. Right now you've got the Supreme Court taken over by right-wing cranks, you got the White House taken over by right-wingers, you got the House taken over by right-wingers, and you got the Senate taken over by right-wingers, and yet they represent probably fewer than 25% of the people in America in terms of perspective.
We deserve, you know.
Well, I disagree. It's a nice slogan, Mike. It's a nice slogan, but we really need to go to this.
People just kind of, you know, I have friends that have seen these pictures and stuff, but nobody wants, we don't even want, I mean, they are disgusting. But, no, you know, I mean, we just swallow our outrage and say, let's just move on.
Okay, so here's the question, Mike. What are you going to do about it?
I'm applying for my passport to get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm not willing to give up. I'm writing letters to the editor of the newspapers. In fact, I would like to
do something, but you know, I scream and yell and people run.
Here, let me give you a tip. Sign up on the georgewbush.com site.
Well,
hear me out, Mike.
A computer and you know, all this information pollution everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I just really want to just cut myself loose from it.
Yeah, well, what you're going to find is wherever you go in the world,
the Americans are going to attack.
Well, no, the same battles are being fought. The same battles are being fought. It's happening in Australia right now.
Bhutan.
It's happening in England right now. It's happening in Canada right now. It's happening in Greece.
Bhutan has a monarchy, and in Bhutan, people, they don't want anything from us, and they're not exporting anything.
Yeah. Well,
they won't let me in, but
there you go. Yeah. Well, good luck, Mike. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And you know, this is a great little trick that I learned. Go to the GeorgeWBush.com site, the official campaign site for George Bush. There's a couple of them. They all kind of point to the same place. And sign up. I signed up. Do you want to be a team leader for George Bush, a volunteer to go out there and knock on doors and things? And so I signed up. I gave him my address. I gave him my name, my email address. My middle name has changed to REP. So whenever I get emails from them, I know, you know, which place I signed up. And what's really cool is they sent me an email yesterday. I get these about once a week. And it's got a link on it that I can click. And it brings up all of the... Now, I live in Vermont. It brings up all of the newspaper, radio stations, and television stations in Vermont. And I can just click on a link and automatically create a letter to the editor. And they will send it, and it'll look like it just, like, you know, came from me unsolicited, you know, with nobody in the middle. And so I'm writing these letters to the editor saying, you know, let's get George Bush out of office. They built this incredible, wonderful, powerful structure to access, and a list of all the talk radio stations and their telephone numbers and when to call them, and they're asking people to commit to call into talk radio and support George W. Bush. They don't have my show on the list, unfortunately, but you know, it is giving you access using their tools against them. 1-866-889-8894. Ann in Sarasota, Florida's on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi, you were talking about the drug companies and their influence on the Bush government. And I read an article recently on Rents.com about Eli Lilly and their ties to the Bush family.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with that article at all?
I am not, but nothing would surprise me.
Well, this is kind of goes the whole thing about the corruption and about the ties. It's like Eli Lilly grows something like $2.6 billion off of one of their drugs that's a black blockbuster. I can't talk today.
Yeah.
One of those antipsychotic drugs. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Medicaid, if they push it big through Medicaid. So they made like almost half the profits off that one drug. And then Eli Lilly has big ties to the Bush family as far as members of their board being members of Bush's.
Oh, yeah. They're all in bed with each other. It's absolutely off the wall. Ann, thanks for the call. I got to move along here. We got to take a break here and pay some bills. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Making companies more responsible for the products they make can cut down on what goes into the garbage can. I'm Steve Poplin for Earthwatch Radio. Over the past 50 years, single-use products have become a driving force in industrial economies. The environmental costs of our throwaway society are enormous. Michael Renner is a researcher with the World Watch Institute. He says new policies in Europe aim to cut down on wasteful consumption. Companies must comply with extended producer responsibility laws.
What extended producer responsibility means is companies are no longer permitted to produce a product, sell it, and then basically never have to worry about that product and the materials that are embedded in the product again. These extended producer responsibility laws state that companies have to be responsible for their product the entire way. Once the product comes to the end of its useful life, the company is actually expected to take that product back and then to see whether the product can be taken apart so that maybe the materials can be salvaged, the various parts can be reused.
Renner says these take-back laws encourage companies to produce goods that can be recycled or reused. He says another practice, called cradle-to-cradle, encourages manufacturers to work together to cut waste.
But another idea that's embedded in Cradle to Cradle is to see whether the byproducts of a given factory, instead of becoming part of the waste flow, whether they might actually be something that is usable in another factory, hopefully one that is actually located physically very close by.
Renner says making industry more responsible for its products is an effective way to put an end to our throwaway consumption habits. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Actually, this should be my song for Friday. This weekend, heading down to St. Louis for the ADDA convention, the Attention Deficit Disorder Association. Should be a interesting gig. In fact, Rama Schneider will be in here on Monday filling in for me. I'll be flying home on that day. Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jeff in Denver's on the line to wrap up our show. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
Hi, Tom. Regarding a caller, I guess, Mike, who said, you know, he's going to leave the country.
Yeah.
I know that temptation. I maybe move out, but I'm still going to be participating here. If the whole thing, America, love it or leave it, you can't leave America because it's everywhere on the planet.
Yeah, I actually did once. We moved to Germany for a year back in the mid-'80s. And what you get when you live outside the United States and you look back is that for better or for worse, and sometimes it's for better and sometimes it's for worse. I mean, seriously, this country sets the tone for the rest of the planet.
Yeah, I've been in rural South Pacific islands where you know, there are like a couple dozen people on the island, and every day I'd see the reef get smaller as the fishermen are blowing up the reef to catch fish for the tropical fish industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, America is affecting everywhere. Funny story, or not so funny story, is a friend of a friend he wanted to get away, so he moved to the Falkland Islands in the early 80s.
Just in time? That's great.
You think, where would be the place in the world where nothing would happen?
Yeah.
Falkland Islands.
Well, we moved to Germany the week after Chernobyl melted down. I mean, right in the path. I mean, I remember walking around in downtown Frankfurt. It was on my birthday. It was the first week of May. You know, it happened on April 26th, 86, and I flew into Frankfurt, and the whole city was evacuated. It was like a ghost town because it was raining, and I didn't realize what was going on. I'm walking around, and there's nobody on the streets, and the guy in the hotel says, you know, it's raining radioactive dust out there. You shouldn't go outside. I'm like,
wow. Mm-hmm. You know. And when I first got off the plane in Australia, I noticed how, everything looked like America. They call them freeways. They have 7-Elevens and Safeway and Kinko's and Target.
Yep.
It's all over the place. You're not going to get away from America. Bhutan might be about the only place, but Bhutan just introduced cable TV in a couple of years.
If we're going to fix it, we got to fix it here. Jeff, thanks for the call and the good sentiment. Always great to hear from you. Thank you to Louise also for producing our show today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for producing the music for it. Thanks to Jay, by the way, who wrote the theme music that you're listening to right now and performed it. Thanks to Shelby for RadioPower.org, our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics. Be sure to patronize them if you've got a Mac or you know anybody who does. And thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.